This is a very special edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. A wee kaupapa, to use the Māori vernacular. And we've got three guests here, and we'll go around the circle and have them introduce themselves for you.
Kia ora, my name is To'o.
And kia ora, my name is Robin.
And my name is Richie.
Okay, so we have To'o, Robin and Richie. All right. Well, and ordinarily this would be a congregation of white bankers who would steal your stuff. They'd be Robin and then later on they'd be Richie. they'd be looking to haul you out to some other kind of slave master. But today we're going to be doing basically the direct opposite. So, Toho, if you would take us away and then tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Okay, kia ora ana, Vinnie, for this opportunity. This afternoon I was in the company of Richie and Robin, and Robin actually said to me, how did you get involved in all of this in terms of speaking out and saying things which, and helping people empower themselves? And I said to them, well, I think it goes right back to the day I was born. My first breath, as far as I'm concerned, I was born, my first breath was just when I was born, I took a breath and it was all a breath of bullshit. And that's actually how I really believe, how I feel. And I say that is because I'm also come from the Cook Islands and have been brought up here on Aotearoa. And you know, even just going back, Vinnie, right at the days when we were at school, we were told that, you know, New Zealand was only 150 years old. And as a little Cook Island person from the islands, I knew that that was not quite right. So even right at the very beginning, I always felt that somehow or another we needed to find really what the truth was all about. So I carried on living down in the Manawatū, moving around, going into boarding school, finally university, but also spent a number of years working in the trade union movement. And then 1992, when the national government came in and was working with the round table, we could see very, very extensively, very, very quickly how the system was going to change very, very quickly. And so I'm one of those oldies, Vinnie, who've seen the process, have watched the process, and where the younger people have only just been born into the watching.
It's funny you should mention that, because we had a conversation about that today on the show about the generation gap, for example, the baby boomers and now Generation X. And I love it how the baby boomers blame Generation X for being so lazy and the world's all going to crap. Well, the world's crap already and the baby boomers are just as responsible. And you can't pawn it off and blame one generation or the other. We're all at fault and we're all responsible for changing it back to the way it should be.
And that's also where I really know that there's been so much deception, so much lies, so many things which are so incorrect. And right up to, you know, 10 minutes ago when you put the TV on and here's John Key saying, I will not look at the document stating that John Banks was being paid by .com. And, of course, by him not looking at that document, doesn't have to acknowledge it. And what I cannot understand or believe the how much lies have been put out there for our young people to be growing up in. And that I think is really soul damaging. I think that's too many lies. So I think you're right, you know, us baby boomers also saw the truth and knew the truth. And I think, you know, hopefully it's my opportunity to carry on talking and unfolding the you know, the corruptness of what's actually going on here, not only just in Aotearoa, but right around the whole world. If something goes down here under this government of the New Zealand government, it also can spread right into the other islands which come under this government. And, of course, that is a concern for me. So what happens down here in terms of the water rights, it also can overflow into the Cook Islands. and into other, you know, Niue. So what goes down here, of course I have a big concern of the welfare and the well-being of the people.
Mm.
But look, Vinny, you could have me going here for ages because I've also been involved in many other issues like anti-nuclear up in the Pacific. So of course we know about what's what the air, what we're breathing is not good.
Well, that covers a little bit about who you are. Now, Robin, would we be able to go on with you next?
Yes, yeah, certainly. I suppose I've had an innate desire to learn more about what's going on in the world. As a younger man, you know, I was more interested in sports and everything else that, you know, young men are interested in. And it wasn't until some time ago now that I become more exposed to what, you know, is actually going on behind the scenes and how governments aren't really what they say they are, and the powers that rule them aren't really to the forefront. They're actually well behind the scenes. And I met Richie not so long ago, and I'm just helping him with a couple of issues that he wants to try and handle. And then met pretty much half an hour ago, you know. So I don't know a lot about her co-papa, but I'm aware of certain aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm coming from is, once again, trying to develop more into the areas of what truth really is. And of course you've got relative truths and absolute truths, and for different people they could mean different things. But I was explaining to Tor, you know, when I first started on this road, one of the things I remember thinking about, you know, there's a scripture, you know, tell the truth and the truth shall set you free. Yeah, so, and all my Māori friends, Māori mates and island mates and so on, they'd tell the truth and all they'd get is a bit of a bash. And of course, it didn't resonate well with them. And so it's got me thinking exactly what does that scriptural phrase mean? And I started thinking about different things. You think of onions, onion layers and all the rest of it. Same with scripture. People think, well, if you're reading the Bible, if you're studying the Bible, you must be religious. And I actually take a counterpoint of view that if you're reading the Bible, one purpose you want to read it and study it is because there's your remedy at law, wherever you may find it, but you've got to actually find it and understand it, come to a greater comprehension of what that can mean for you. And so with regards to that scripture, once again, tell the truth, etc., I said, well, what is the truth? Maybe it's do the truth. Do that which is truthful and that shall set you free. Yeah, possibly. And then I sort of, what is the truth? And in my own mind, for my own sort of sense of understanding, I got to a truth. Truth is the law of God. It's God's law. So if you tell the truth, tell the law, then the law shall set you free. And eventually they've got it so far along the lines of do that which is lawful and the law shall set you free. And of course then you start getting to the free man stuff and all the different concepts and paradigms surrounding that, and that really piqued my interest, and that's basically how I started to get into these sort of things.
Okay. And Richie?
Pretty quick. Yeah, my name is Richie, retired for Richmond Chase. I was born in New Zealand in 1945, so I've been here a few years. And I spent a lot of time in the services, and then I went overseas for 3 years and lived in the Philippines, and I experienced some strange phenomena there. I got back to New Zealand in 1980, and I was going to stay here for a short time and see the family, but I couldn't believe it. That next minute I'm very involved in Maoritanga, which I'd never been involved with before. I used to love looking at Maori carvings and things like this, but never got involved in it. And I started listening deeper to the old people's ways and things that went on. And this got me very interested. And 7 years later, I felt that I had got a message to portray to the Four Winds. And nothing will stop me expressing this. I thank Vinny today to be on this show, and that one of our close friends said to me the other day, or to us, he said that we've got to get Vinny to follow the country around the Aotearoa area, because there's some exciting things happening in this part of the planet. And I keep emphasising that because we've only got 4 million people here, we should be able to get the message through. For goodness sake, the next country you go to has got about 50 million. And so it should be no problem to get our little kaupapa through to the planet. and to help people like David Icke to waken the sheep up and to get them to become aware that not to give away their power and to be under the systems which have been moving people around for, God, 20,000 years maybe. We've got to start doing it now. And in my heart, it's people like Vinny that I like to help because I admire him when he spoke at David Icke. And that, as they say, many hands make light work. I'll just take a little break for now.
Okay, now there is a reason and a specific topic that we're actually here for today. I just wanted to, like the audience, I don't know who you guys are, not met you before, and here you are in the studio, and so now I know who you are and what you do. Now I want to know, what is it we'd like to talk about at all?
Well, again, I just want to be able to see that we are able to get the truth out. That you know, you turn the radio on or watch TV and there is so much misconception, there's so much illusion there, and you know, there's McDonald's all around the place, there's the Coca-Colas, there's the whole, all the banking systems, there's the you know, it's like, again, John Key owning, having shares in property here, and for the people, the general people are not even able to say anything against that system. And I guess my kaupapa is, again, a bit like Robin's, is all about the truth, and it's about unravelling that and being able for the young people, because we always talk about our future generations, and so of course my kaupapa is also in concern with them. There's not been an awful lot what's been left for us at the moment. We're all on the dole or unemployed and have been for the last 20 years, you know. And it's certainly not any of that's not been my fault. And I think when you come even to that fact, that there's people who are very capable of working, who have worked, then become very ill because they're not working, you know. And there's a whole social problem out there, you know, and really it's not our fault. So basically it's about getting the truth out, getting it out, and helping people to start to look into, search into themselves about their own being, about their own conception of their own lives and being able to run it.
Well, you mentioned something specific about some letter or something that you'll be receiving a reply to in 2 days. Are you able to elaborate on that at all? What's that about?
Yes, that has been a letter. What we've a very small group of us have sent a letter to John Key in terms of exposing the fact who really are the landowners of Aotearoa, and really in Māoridom, of course, where they are the caretakers. Also, Māoridom, also in the Pacific Island, people also worked under what they call universal law.
Tikanga law.
Probably bigger than that. And so what it's about is there's some property, land, which has been
stolen?
Well, basically, yes, it has been stolen.
Let's call a shovel a shovel.
I'm trying to find something polite to be able to say, but definitely.
No, this is the Vinnie Eastwood show, all right? let's not self-censor you.
But definitely, there's been many things which have been hidden in terms of the ownership of this country, and that truth needs to be coming out. I'm sure that you'll have the opportunity to actually interview the person who I'm referring to, but we're all part of a group, all part of still coming out with exposing that truth. So the letter has gone to John Key. We are expecting a reply back in a couple of days' time. And what it does state on that is that he has fraudulently taken land, which is not.
What, John Key specifically has fraudulently taken land?
Well, along with the government has. They've done it in a very fraudulent manner.
Well, and were we talking recently or over time as well?
Over time. Continuously over time. the whole process of taking of the land.
When did this process of taking the land really start?
Well,
as soon as the settlers arrived,
exactly.
Well, here's the statement. Okay, I think I can summarise this. We claim this land for Her Majesty. That's when they started stealing.
Yeah, right at the very beginning.
Yeah, I suppose it would have come back. Comes down to when Captain Cook was commissioned to actually come out here, and I believe he was trying to follow the transit of Venus.
Yes.
And now I don't know as an absolute, but it's an area of research that I'd like to dwell on further. With regards to finding the land where the sun rises first and the original people of that land and establishing an area of contact.
Mm-hmm.
And as to where that contact would go and what would happen after that was going to be quite an intriguing situation. And I suppose if you look at it from that perspective, there was a particular reason to come out here, and one of the areas of reason would more than likely have been to actually conquer, not quite the accurate word, some way or other.
Set up trading posts, economic imperialism, much like the Dutch East India Trading Company did. They did a lot of exploration for the British Empire, simply to set up trade routes and tap new resources, things of that nature.
Exactly. And in that particular fashion, you know, what's the catchword of today? You know, your free trade associations and all that. That's exactly what they did back then, isn't it?
Word for word. And in fact, the British Empire drew up free trade deals with India so that they could have a salt monopoly.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yes. This is the thing. In my interpretation of the word, translation, free trade equals slave trade. So if you sign a slave trade agreement, you've just traded yourself and your people off to be slaves.
Yes.
Essentially, that's how the model works. And we're now experiencing almost like a neo-feudalistic takeover of resources and capital the world over, and it's happening simultaneously as well for the first time ever.
Yes.
They're capable with the internet and modern technology and traveling methodologies.
Exactly.
They're capable of conquering the whole planet at once rather than one country at a time now. So I think that this is not only a problem that New Zealand faces, but also every single other culture, including indigenous and everybody. Basically, unless you're one of the top 1,100 // elite sociopaths that kind of run the show, you don't have no freedom.
Yes.
And if you still do, it's going to be taken from you eventually. And ergo, you have to fight back. You no longer have a choice in the matter, I feel. Anybody who sits back on the sideline who says, we should wait to see how things turn out, that would be a plan if you didn't know what the original plan was.
Mm-hmm.
If you know the plan is to enslave everybody, what are you waiting for when you're resisting?
Yes, exactly. And if you're waiting to see what turns out, you'll be waiting and you'll see when you get turned out.
In the meat grinder sense of the word.
Yep.
Yes. And in terms of New Zealand land and things like that, we just got off the phone with Lynn's Lambert not more than half an hour ago. And it seems, it's basically, it doesn't matter whether you're white, Maori, or anything. If you're not a bad person, you're under threat, I think.
Yep. Yeah, well, with regards to the Maori concept of kaitiakitanga, you know, which is guardianship, caretakership, stewardship. They've never, ever had a concept of ownership.
Mm.
But in today's context, you know, the way we talk about things today, that's the simplest way to actually put it forward and that people generally in today's world will understand. And so I think Māori are starting to utilise that, not because it's what they believe, but that's the easiest way to actually convey the concept.
That's actually the whole concept of government as well, as prudent stewardship. And I remember a discussion held at Unite Union some months ago where one of the speakers was representing a Māori group that had caretaker responsibilities over many lakes and many rivers around New Zealand. And every single lake and every single river that has been put into government care has become polluted, dammed and destroyed.
Exactly.
Every single lake and every single river that was put into Māori stewardship is now still pristine and perfect. And so now, naturally, the government wants to solve that pristine, perfect problem by taking ownership of the remaining lakes and rivers.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So I think that it's there's two things that we need to think here. There's what is communal, what benefits everybody and what needs everybody. So that would be air, water, and things like that. And what can somebody have as something that's useful for them? Now, I'm 100% sure that privatization and giving it to foreign corporations is not of benefit to anybody here. And if it is, it's only a very small clique of investors and things of that nature. How exactly do we solve that? I mean, how much stewardship and partnership does there need to be before we can stop those processes from happening?
Yeah, well, one of the things that I've come across, and of course, To'o and Richie will be able to make comment in their direction as well, is the fact that a lot of people, and I can't say everyone, but a lot of people seem to have a sense that Māori are a key, especially in Aotearoa New Zealand, because we are tangata whenua.
Aye.
So Māori are the key as with regards to how we can solve that situation. The biggest difficulty we have, I think two or maybe threefold, is number one, first of all, you've got to know that you are a key, and therefore you can act upon it. And number two, you've got to be aware that certain keys also work for the other key, the John key.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, you may have come across the term, I make reference to it fairly often, especially with my family, that you have kūpapa, those who work on side of the government, not really knowing what it's all about, but simply because that's the way they've been trained or indoctrinated or brainwashed, that, you know, the government is the authority. And of course, the question I asked of them, well, who was the government? You know, it's some fictitious entity that you're actually giving your sovereign, you know, sentient beingship away to. Mm-hmm. So here you are a living being, and you want to put yourself and subjugate yourself to something that's a fiction. It doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like the living serving the dead. Mm. When the dead are gone and you've got to pay respect to them, but not serve them because they're freaking dead.
Yes.
You know, and if you spend all your time doing that kind of thing, what happens to the living that you leave on their own to do nothing, you know?
They get worse off and worse off.
Well, as I said to Robin today, that, you know, to me, if I was explaining what the government was, is that I just say to people, that it's just like the tennis club. It's got the president, the secretary, and the treasurer, and members.
Mm.
That, to me, was the simplest way to explain what the government is.
Yeah, and all they are is a changeover of corporate offices.
Yeah, exactly. And I always found it funny, like the concept of ownership of a person is very interesting. I belong to the National Party. Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
does that mean you're a piece of their property? Does that mean if they determined it, they'd cut your feet and hands off and bleed you out and then roast you on the spit, mate? You know, are you their property?
And you'd accept it?
Yeah. You see, this is the thing. People have forgotten about their individuality. And as you mentioned, the word before, sovereignty.
Yes.
And likewise, it seems that sovereignty just in general is under attack. National sovereignty, personal sovereignty, business sovereignty, intellectual sovereignty, all forms of it are under attack. And it translates in many ways as the ability to be independent, to not need and be dependent upon other people to give you your life, give you your resources. I can survive,
mm-hmm.
You know. I haven't had a proper job in something like 5 years. I'm still alive.
But you're busier than ever before.
Yeah, I'm busier than ever before, and I'm accomplishing more than most in terms of doing this media thing. Like I actually produce more content, original content, by myself per day than TV3 or TVNZ does, mm-hmm. because what they do is they'll have, like, say, what? You'll have your breakfast program, which says the same news stories over and over and over again all the way through it, maybe a few original interviews that only get played there. And then they have the midday news, which is the same headlines repeated, and the evening news, mm. and the late news.
Yep.
And what they've done is they've actually only produced about maybe 45 minutes of real, actual content per day,
mm-hmm.
whereas I'm doing 2 hours minimum, at most 6 hours per day. It's just, it goes to show you that you can fit more information when you start listening than you do if you flash 30 seconds of manufactured bullshit in front of people's face.
Yes.
And when we talk about the media or any other form of information program, we really are talking about the censorship of relevant information. This is why I say that if the media won't do their job, don't go and ask them to keep doing their job, just replace them because they are no longer relevant. And we've got to stop bowing to people who we think are irrelevant. There was a study done in the United States that says you're approximately 17 times more likely to break a story out if you just go, you know, bugger it, I'm going to go and break the story myself and just start a blog or whatever, than you are if you go to any currently established media entity.
Yes.
And this is what I've been telling people. You're more effective on your own. Like Special Forces, for instance. You ever seen those movies where the guy goes, you know, don't even think about it, I'm better on my own, yep. You know? and the concept does work. The concept works, basically.
Yep.
Because you're not held up by anybody else, essentially.
Well, you know, when you look at mainstream media, I suppose the first thing they'll look at, they owe a bit of an allegiance to their editor, that sort of thing. And, of course, they also have a very strong allegiance to the pocket.
Ah.
And that can dictate a large number of directions in which you might want to go. Even if you want to go in a particular direction, your pocket says, no, I can't, otherwise I'm going to lose out big time here. Therefore, I'm going to just squash this at this moment in time.
Yeah, so I'm acting under the assumption the things that you guys are talking about with the land confiscations and things since day dot ain't getting a lick of attention, yeah?
Exactly. And of course, once again, talking about things that we're discussing today, Richie and Paul and I, you know, if you don't assert your rights, you don't have any rights.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, this is my perspective, I suppose you could say, with regards to the water rights as an example. If Māori don't assert their rights, then the government certainly will, because no other group is going to actually assert their rights over the water. And maybe I'm one-eyed or biased, etc., but I tend to feel that we might be a little bit better off if Māori assert their rights and do it successfully than if the corporates assert their rights. Then you'll really know where we're at.
Well, I'm under the opinion that corporations don't actually have rights per se, because only human beings have rights.
Exactly.
And corporations are simply fictional entities. But there was a ruling in the United States Supreme Court that corporations are now considered people, okay? Which is ironic, because corporations don't take responsibility for any of the stuff that they do, as people can be. Like, what are you going to do? Put Halliburton in jail? You know, how do you fit that building through the jail cell walls? You know,
you just take the piece of paper and put that in jail.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's the piece of paper going to do? You know, rattle a cup on the bars and stuff like that.
Complain about its treatment.
Yeah, you know, the piece of paper will be hunched over backwards, playing in a harmonica or something like that. Yeah. You know. It's just stupid when you think about it. You know, it's like the legal system has been designed to make insanity appear real to people so that they will believe that it's real, that they will obey it as though it's real, when it is not. And it only takes a momentary glance behind that little curtain before you see the little man working the levers and how powerless and weak he truly is. And this is the concept that we talk about sovereignty, basically, is that exposing simply the fraud that you're living in. And I said many times, we're enslaved in a million ways. You know, you wake up and everything that's touching your body, from your polymer resin cups that you drink out of, to your photon-deficient sunglasses that you wear, or whatever. It's all fracked, whichever way you look at it. So we've got to stop participating in every possible way.
Yeah. And we've got to do it where everyone can benefit, not just a select few. Because otherwise, hey, we're going to be reduced to a very small number of people in a very short period of time. You know, that does seem to be on the agenda. And we're talking about corporate rights before. I hear what you're saying with regards to corporations don't have rights. However, if the presumption's allowed to stand, then the presumption does stand.
Yes.
Yep. And everything has to be rebutted accordingly. It's a bit like when John Key made his announcement, we don't have any truck with the King stating that Māori own water. That's just simply not the case. If you don't rebut that, then that allows to continue, and the assumption is, hey, we have an evidence of fact here. which it's not necessarily the case.
Yes. And our journalists are very cowardly about this. I mean, let's say if I was invited to these press conferences, anything, you know.
You'd be a stunned mullet.
Well, not really. I'd probably have to take a megaphone so I wouldn't hear my voice too much and interrupt every 4 seconds or 6 seconds or something, the jonkey will tell a lie. And just, you know, every time he does that, just have a pre-recorded thing. And I've got this. I've got this one here. Let me see if I can do that. You're a liar! You're a liar! You know, and this is an appropriate response, I feel, you know, because the other people just simply do not have the cojones.
Yes, yes.
I don't know. I see problems and I see simple solutions, but most people see big, complicated problems and they only look at the complications.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the natural fact is very simple, isn't it? It's right in front of your eyes.
This is true.
It's very simple.
Don't worry about the thousands and try and describe the thousands of lies that he's said. Don't listen. Mm. Just tell him he's a liar. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's your solution. It matters not what he lies about.
Yep.
If you demonize him as a liar, it means nothing that he says will have any impact ever again.
Mm.
So long as people understand it, people believe it. And I'm surprised at the extent of hatred towards John Key. Well, satisfied and surprised at the same time. Because you basically, on Facebook, okay, I write a lot of Facebook statuses, you know, and I'll write out a big, complicated one that's very philosophical, very intelligent, maybe like 25 likes or something like that, maybe a few shares. But criticizing John Key is like shooting fish in a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
You just say John Key is a scumbag, and all of a sudden it's all over the place. People have shared it, and it's just simply, I don't understand New Zealanders' infatuation with this con man.
Mm-hmm.
He is the slickest. Like, I had a joke, you know, what's slicker than John Key? The Bay of Plenty. You know, because we had the arena with the oil spill out there, you know. And he's just as toxic and vile. And you have a look back into his past. Used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. 2 years of derivatives trading. What caused the financial crisis in 2000? Oh, yeah, that's right, derivatives trading. So who better to come and destroy this country than the man who destroyed the world?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the song by Nirvana, The Man Who Sold the World, comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. But of course, you've got to admit also that he actually profiles quite well. You know, he's the Teflon Don, so to speak. Teflon John, I think you've got on your... But the Teflon Don, who comes across, you know, with great solutions, and we'll do this and we'll do that. But the agenda behind the scenes, yeah, when you start to get really into it, makes a big difference to your thinking processes and to where we're really at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these people leave trails behind them, not entirely like Hansel and Gretel.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a look back and trace their work histories, and you think to yourself, hey, globalist job, globalist job, globalist job, globalist job, and they keep working their way up to the rank until eventually he's got the ultimate globalist job.
Because
Being Prime Minister, Prime Minister of New Zealand...
Yeah.
Leaves nothing to the imagination. Okay, you get to handpick all your ministers, and you get to introduce legislation. You can call urgency whenever you want. Basically, you're a dictator.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
You get elected by the people. Please dictate me. I'll give you my vote if you become my dictator.
Mm.
Are you? See, the frustration kind of piles on when you try to look at the problem. So let's try and think about any kind of feasible solutions here. Because next election, we're not going to be throwing John Key out. He's popular in the polls. And even if he wasn't popular in the polls, the media would just lie and say that he was, like they did in the last election, and fuck all people will turn out to vote against him.
Yes, I think Mitch was telling us there's a million less people who voted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a significant figure.
Yeah. It was 1896 the last time we had a voter turnout that low, back when women weren't allowed to vote.
Yes.
There was, because there were even fewer voters. You know? And it's like the media has that much power, don't
exactly.
they, of influencing
yes.
voting, and not to mention what was happening the 3 months or so leading up to the election, the big frack-off Rugby World Cup. And you'll notice that this is actually a common theme all over the world. Whenever there are massive elections going on, they will have huge sporting events, and as a direct result, nobody's listening to the politics because they're all watching the rugby.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's where us oldies come into it. We've seen it, and there's a huge cycle. Continues to be a cycle. So that's where us oldies, we can see the cycle, but it's also slowing that cycle up. Or like we're saying, get out there and say, you know, he's a liar. I do not wish to be under his dictation. So some of us oldies have got some some history there to be able to share. Yeah.
And I've noticed that myself as that, and I mentioned it to my friend Jonathan Eisen, who's 69 now, I think. And I said to him, my preferred friends and contacts are actually the ones that are significantly older than I am, like usually about twice the age of myself, being a young 27-year-old. I've seen that they've had far more experience, more time to think on things, and they have more stories to tell simply by the amount of time that they've been around. And by and this is another thing that we should be getting into as well, is that there's this false adversarial relationship between the generations. Have you noticed?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yes.
One generation is very elder and bitter that they're not young anymore, and they criticize the youth for going around and using their youth to have fun just as they did. You know, it's a total hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And the youth are going, oh, the old people, you don't know what they're talking about. You know, you haven't seen when they clearly know 10 times to 20 times the amount, because they've lived far longer. And if those two groups were getting together, you would have the youth with the energy to get things done and the elders with the knowledge how to make those things done right.
Exactly, yes, that makes a big difference. What's the old saying? The older I become, the more I realise what I didn't know. And of course, when you're young, you know everything. The world is your oyster. And of course, you eat that oyster as quickly as you can.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also do believe that the young people, they can see what's going on. They see what the parents are saying. They can see, hear the lies. I mean, and that's one thing what I do feel, that the young people, a lot of young people are onto it. We're onto it, and are still onto it, but somehow have to make a living or get good marks at school or something. But that's what I have found, that some talk to those young kids and we listen to them, they'll say, yeah, he's a liar. Jonky's a liar.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they know, but then by the time they work into those systems, back into the education thing, have to get a job, then a lot of that knowledge goes. And so,
they're still caught up in the slave trade. Certain things that they realise. And I think it's actually up to our generations to actually teach them more as to what's behind the scenes and how it happened, the different aspects of it. And a number of the younger people that I've spoken to, when we get into areas of discussion, it really opens up their eyes quite a lot. But then, of course, what's the solution for them? What can they do? I'm just a single entity here in this speck in this part of the universe. You know, what I do is not going to perhaps amount to much. But if you get the collective sort of consciousness happening, and I think across the planet there is a wave of consciousness happening. Once it gets to a sort of a maximum point, it'll really start to take off and explode in a big way.
See, I've got a different interpretation to that. Usually you don't need to cast a thousand to make big changes. I mean, there's two examples, like the elite, small amount of people with a systemic methodology, creating these mechanisms so that they don't have to work. They don't have to brainwash people. They just build an institution like Tavistock Institute or something like that, and pay all those scum to come up with the ways to brainwash people so that you don't have to keep them in line actively. You don't have to point guns at them. You just give them a can of Coke, and they'll drink that poison, and it'll make them dumber, it'll slow down their mind, and they'll never interpret that it's actually there specifically to kill them, you know, that kind of thing. And when it comes to individuality versus collectivism, throughout history, it is littered, absolutely littered, with individuals who have simply come in, saw what was going on, changed everything, and everybody followed them. You know, Alexander the Great, Macedonia and Greece were very, very low down the scale in the old world, and he managed to use phalanx warfare, basically, to slaughter armies that were thousands of times his size. Mm-hmm. He was capable of setting up different cultures that actually had respect, and satraps and congressmen and basically things like that in places that he conquered. conquered to the point where he was actually getting loyalty from the people that he conquered because he was just so far ahead of the game.
Yes.
And that's the lesson of history I found. It's not one man can't make a difference. In truth, he's the only thing that ever has.
Yes, I think you're right in that regard. What I'm saying is that any single individual, when they start getting onto a positive crusade, that starts to spiral.
Snowball.
Mm. Yeah, snowball up, and then you get that greater wave of consciousness happening. Yeah, I know what you're saying in that regard. I certainly can concur. Mm. But eventually, everybody's got to come together and actually work together.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they're actually going to be forced in a direction that they may not necessarily like at all.
Mm-hmm. And back on that Alexander the Great thing, the reason why his empire fell apart is because he died.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
And that's another lesson of history, that if you are not the one sharing the power and giving the knowledge out to everybody, once you're gone, everything that you've built dies with you.
Mm-hmm.
People will remember you as Alexander the Great, but the society that's left behind ain't great.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Definitely.
So, and this is something that I want to do myself, is just like the New World Order's done. They've figured out a conspiracy for everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is how we control education. This is how we control food supply. This is how we control water. This is how we control electricity, police, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
I want to come up with similar systemic methodologies that I can set it and forget it and walk away while the system cooks itself in its own juices and then comes back for me one day and just go like, mate, that's juicy and beautiful.
Have you come across that method yet?
I'm coming across them on a daily thing. Like, first thing I believe is the crux of any society is information. And so this is the problem that I'm trying to solve now. I figured out a couple of years ago that there's not enough information being told to the people. There's not enough activists getting enough airtime. When I see an activist on TV, it's 12 seconds, one statement, that's it. Mm-hmm. When I interview people, it's 1 hour, 2 hours, multiple statements, multiple interpretations, and more complexity and more fullness of the information. So I figured out what the problem was, did the opposite.
Yep.
And that's basically everything that the world runs on. We are living in the upside down opposite world.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can just have a look at any problem, you don't need to understand the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You simply do the exact opposite of whatever the problem is,
yes.
And it solves it.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem is that people take really long time to edit. People take a really long time to organize interviews, things like that. And I can, at the moment, edit an interview in 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a 2-hour interview in 12 minutes, I can edit, and I can put that onto YouTube within 4 hours. Yep. with a total of maybe 20 minutes of doing that one and a half hour video.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all because I've developed little methodologies, just using the computer and things like that, and solving these little problems as they come up one at a time, and just thinking, I don't want to waste my time. I want to be able to have free time so that I can do more, you know?
Yes.
And that's the method of a good businessman, allegedly, is to make yourself redundant.
And perfectly so.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, when you talked about the activist in isolation, you know, when they comment on a few seconds of news, and it's generally a comment which makes them look like, you know, the radical and insane.
Mm.
Whereas what I appreciate about your type of interview, you know, as you say, a number of minutes and hours, etc., they come across as being quite cohesive and actually know what they're talking about.
Mm.
So there's a difference. Portrayal from one direction, oh, look at this madman, and with regards to, you know, an ongoing interview, there's a lot that this guy's saying which makes sense.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like this. When you go out to the protests and I've seen the mainstream media do some dirty stuff, man. Like, my mate Malcolm France from People Before Property, he's got dreadlocks and he looks kind of raggedy. He's the smartest dude you'll ever talk to, you know. You just talk to him and it's like, wow, man. And then we had a protest and there were 60 protesters kind of wanted to occupy the street and what have you. And there was a line of cops. There was 47 cops long just to hold back these 60 protesters. And all the protesters were sitting there holding this one banner. The photographer gets a shot where all you see is Malcolm France with dreadlocks and all these police in front of him. So they automatically demonize the whole protest as just looking like a bunch of dreadlock. It's brilliant how cynical they are,
mm-hmm.
and how people will actually look at it and go, what the frick? You know, And you see this all the time. I mean, one time I was with a Māori activist group, and we were in the courthouse, and the cops tried to arrest me because I was filming inside the courthouse kind of thing, and we had all these gang members around that stood in front of me and pushed the cop back and just like, get your hands off him, boy, you know. You know, and after it, that we had all our elders in Kaumātua there, right, and we were talking about sovereignty and all the intellectual, very highbrow stuff that you have to be quite educated to do. The gang members who were there, who were kind of being taken under the wing, they didn't know anywhere near as much. Mm-hmm. But guess who the mainstream media reporter who was there goes to try and interview? The one gang member who has very few teeth, no education, a cap tipped to the side, who looks like a fracking criminal. Mm-hmm. And she goes up to him real smiley, hey, would you like to come outside for an interview, you know, that kind of thing. And I just looked at this man and I was like, wow, it solidified it right there for me. Mm-hmm. Exactly how much of a cynical, demonizing group of fracks these people are. Yes. And they no longer will have any respect for me. And so on that day, when they were doing their cross cut outside, they had their camera set up. Mm-hmm. To film the entire courtyard and the entire courthouse, and I went and I stood right in the middle of their shot behind them when they were doing their cross. Okay. And this guy comes up to me and he says, hey, can you move, please? And I go, no, man, I'm talking to whenua. And he goes, well, you have to be so fucking arrogant, you know. He's just like instant anger, no respect, you know, that kind of thing. Didn't want to ask why or anything. And it's just like, I pissed off one of these mainstream media scum today. I feel good about that. It's called justice. Yeah. You know,
as opposed to just us.
Yeah,
exactly.
See, and respect is about fairness. If somebody treats other people unfairly, I believe they should receive recompense. Mm-hmm. And if nobody is providing that, and you're the one who sees it and notices it, it is the onus and the responsibility is on you, the one who noticed it, to go and do something about it.
Yeah.
Right, and that's, I believe, what activists really are. Is the people who took personal responsibilities for the wrong that they see in this world. Mm-hmm. And decided to do something.
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. You look at your Gandhis, your Mandelas, and yep. Mm-hmm. And that's their story, that's their life story. They've stood up, you know, as a single individual, taking responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And it'd be great if we all were like that. But of course, I suppose we've all got our phobias and fears, and what's going to happen if we do this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't want to be in the limelight or whatever the case might be.
Yep. Well, imagine a future society where we've kind of figured out all these problems with our human condition, and we've set about, as I've done just with this this alternative media thing, setting out things, a new schooling system that allows people to think and not obey blindly authority. Yes. or things of that nature. Because I'm of the opinion if you teach kids two or three things in school, deductive reasoning,
mm-hmm.
What was it? Crap, I've forgotten them. But anyway, deductive reasoning, common sense, and personal responsibility.
All the slaves will want to leave the plantation. What's wrong with you?
Well, see, this is the thing. Why shouldn't we all have our own plantations? Why can't we all experiment on our own land and our own time and our own way and figure out who we are, rather than trying to herd people into these brainwashing institutions, mm-hmm. To try and stop them from being independent, to try and stop them from feeling like they can have an effect on the world?
Yeah. Point well taken, well expressed.
And the same goes for politics as well. How does politics manage to interpret everybody's voting for them as saying, please enslave us,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Yes.
Because they keep enslaving you, and you keep voting for them. That's why.
Well, the voting mechanism is another way of enslavement.
Exactly.
It's methodology, about, so yes.
It's about consent to it, right? Yep. So if politics was to, in some way, to have that power taken off the politicians to lie and not be held accountable to the people, I would think that it would have to be much smaller cliques of government that would have to come into it. So, for example, you would have the Auckland government, the Northland government, the Waikato government, things like that, rather than the whole country being run by this one group of scum. And, you know, they say, oh, we represent you, but the fact is you can't represent me if you're in a different part of the country all the time doing your work, mate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And as you say, when they represent, you know, it's easier from their perspective that a single group or single entity is the spokesperson. as opposed to little cliques, which, if they're working well and doing what needs to be done, that's all you really want for people and for the planet.
And it's like what you're saying, each like Waikato, all the different areas, Waikato, you know, Bay of Plenty, all under different, all got different laws, different rules. Mm-hmm. So it's very difficult for people to actually confront some of the difficulties because, as you know, they're all, each is of their own identity, you know, of that area. And that's where it becomes very difficult. And then the government will come along and change another rule or another law. And so I think a lot of us, it's good to get touch base on some of the area of how, what you're talking about.
Well, that's how Hapu, that's how they were organised. They had an era of autonomy, an era that they actually governed, so to speak, and other eras were respectful of their tikanga, and they actually knew of their tikanga. They might do something slightly different, but when it came to an era of commonality and common agreement, then they very quickly sort of acknowledged, okay, for example, if you have orahui in an area, which means something's forbidden to take place, maybe because of a death, etc., and all the surrounding hapu, they would acknowledge that is to be the case. So they didn't have to say, oh, we'll enact this into a law, we'll put this into legislation, and then once it's finished, we can actually then do away with it.
If I may, that's kind of like, you've come into my house, bro.
Yes.
This is my house, my rules.
Exactly.
Now, does that mean I'm a draconian evil person because I control my house and live under my rules? Not at all. That's actually something that gives me freedom and independence, is having control over my own life, my own property. And what we've found now with government is that if you have a centralized decision-making, it means you have less diversity of decision-making. It means that you have less capacity to hear people. Like, for example, one man, the Prime Minister, there's only a certain number of hours in the day, so there's only certain amounts of people he can talk to. Rather, you should have 20 prime ministers or something like that, who all have their own autonomy, and it's their responsibility to listen to this very small group of people that they're supposed to be talking to, that they're supposed to be taking care of.
And represent them accordingly.
I mean, for example, I'm from Auckland. I would never go down to Gizzy and tell the people down there how to run their music festivals like Rhythm and Vines or something, because it ain't my area. You're the ones who are living there. It's your house, your rules. As long as you're not coming into my house and violating my rules, we have mutual respect.
Exactly.
And I'll come down for a party. You'll come over here for a party. And we all have fun.
And enjoy life.
You know, why the hell can't we just enjoy life for a change?
Exactly. The $64 million question.
Oh my God! You know, let's just have some fun and stop trying to mess around other people and stop acting like a bunch of freaking criminals. And again, it's not a difficult thing to comprehend. Do you want to be a slave or do you want to be free? Well, I want to be free. Do you want to be lied to or you don't want to be told the truth? Well, I want to be told the truth. You know, these are very, very simple things, but through interpretation, through education, through the legal system, and through all these other complicated inputs, something that should be fracking simple.
Yep.
Is incomprehensible.
Very much so.
And that's where they've got the general population.
Okay.
And of course, we've got to realise too that it's purposely done that way. Yeah, as you say, we're talking about the, you know, selected elite, the elite number of families that are out there. There's an agenda that we sometimes are aware of, other times we're not too totally full, knowledgeable about, but it's coming more and more to the fore. Hey, there's something that's not right with this planet, so let's do something about it. And as you say, life is meant to be enjoyed. Why have we got all these difficulties that we're facing simply because someone else doesn't want us to actually have a level of enjoyment?
And again, it's about taking personal responsibility. What I found really funny is that I've talked to a lot of Pākehā guys and they've all said, oh man, the Māoris are the most important ones to fight back for against the water rights and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what they do is they abdicate their personal responsibility and hand pass the buck to the Māori.
You're so right. So that's why it's for all people.
Yeah.
For all people. And I think, you know, I was part of being down at Tu Rangawaewae for the water hui called by the king. And I stood there and I looked in the hall. I was standing at the door and I looked around the hall. And I'd heard a number of speakers One of the things that really struck me was, you know, we know that, I know that my body is made up of water, 75% or 85% or 80%, but it's 3/4 made up of water.
You're going to be owned by the government. Sorry.
Well, they tried to own me. They tried to own me. But when I look around that room and I wonder how many people really, really understand about the whole water issue in terms of what we're actually made up of, what they've actually sold, what that everything, as we were saying before, you have to have water.
Mm.
Yep.
You must have water.
That's in reference to a documentary that we were talking about.
Nothing can live without water.
Every living organism needs water. They can survive without air, because it can be extracted somewhat from the water.
Mm.
But every single living organism needs water to exist.
Mm.
So it's interesting.
Mm. And also to bring back that whole real elements of the elements of the planet or of the universe.
Mm.
And that's, you know, air, mm. water, earth, metal, fire.
Mm, mm,
you know,
mm.
just coming back to those basic principles. I talked to a couple of the kuiyas there and just mentioned, you know, because they asked me what did I think about it, and I just mentioned about the water, about my body being. And one of them turned around and they said, you know what, you're right. But it took that kōrero and that hui for her to pick up what I was really meaning.
Mm, mm,
and that's what the true essence really is all about.
Yeah.
You know? Mm. So that's what my real kaupapa is all about, is bringing back that true essence, the mm. truth.
Yeah.
And, put, you know, whether it's standing on the street corner, lovely to be talking with you, Vinny,
mm.
And having that opportunity, or just being able to get that word out.
Mm.
Show
mm.
people, help people. Mm. You know, that's what really saddens me, is that it's like they've take your soul.
Yeah.
Because of the water, whole water issue, you know. And look at what they've done. Put the price of beer up. No, put the price of water up. Beer is cheaper to buy now than what it is water.
It's cheaper to dehydrate yourself, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, so I mean, how, where do they get that? Is that common sense? No, I don't understand mm. that. It's to me not common sense at all.
Mm.
That it's cheaper to buy alcohol than it is to buy a flinging bottle of water.
Mm-hmm. You'd must really be more aware of this too, Vinny. Who's the American corporation that bought water rights? Was it Bolivia or somewhere in South America?
A Bechtel.
Bechtel, exactly. And look what they were doing to the people there. Not only that, they weren't even allowed to utilize the rain that was falling from the skies.
They're now enforcing that in parts of Arizona in the United States.
Oh, okay.
And with the food bill legislation coming in here, it won't be too long for us before we won't be able to capture rainwater in municipal mm-hmm. areas and use it and things of that nature. So
yeah.
What we talk about when we talk about the New World Order is a global conspiracy, and,
yes.
And it goes by replication.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll see one fracked up thing happening in one country, and you think to yourself, how long is it going to be till it's here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Like with the terror raids, for instance, you know, messing around Tuhoi like that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't even know that Tuhoi weren't the only people that were raided that day.
Yes.
Most people don't know that activists from animal rights welfare to leftist activists and things like that all around the country who were involved in many times,
yep.
they were busted at the same time, as well as about 15 other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, globally coordinated, massive terror raids just like that. And of course, we've got all this surveillance bill legislation, mm-hmm. which is almost word for word, the Patriot Act from the United States.
Yes.
If it wasn't a global conspiracy, there would be some kind of difference
mm-hmm.
between these things that are happening everywhere. But there isn't.
Mm.
So people have got to stop looking at the term conspiracy as though it means untrue,
mm-hmm.
as though it means insane. I look at the term conspiracy theorist, and to me, I decode it as a person who believes that there were powerful people who have a lot of influence who use their power to maintain their influence.
Yes.
It's not a difficult thing, and it happens all the way through history. It's basically, if you're a conspiracy theorist, it means you're not brainwashed enough to think you know what the hell is going mm-hmm. on.
Yep.
You know, I think it's when people stop questioning. when they abdicate their sense of the possible. Is it possible that they might stab themselves in the foot or something like that and blame it on somebody else so that they can get away with the crime they just committed? Ooh, yeah. So if you have no sense of the possible, you got no alternative to the lie. Yeah. And so I want to inform people that freedom and justice is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stop believing the lie and start trying to find out what the truth is, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It may mess up your life as it did mine. I suffered depression and now I can't, the mainstream psychiatry would term as depression, which is I'm not feeling terribly good because I just realized that I was a slave and got screwed over by three jobs in the same row.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mentally ill. I'm just dealing with a bit rough stuff in my life kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I didn't need drugs or anything to get over that. What I needed to do was figure out what I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. Now I know, and I'm no longer depressed, but I'm still employophobic.
Yes.
Because I haven't gotten over how employers treated me. I haven't gotten over just the mentality of not wanting to get out of bed and go to work in the morning, that kind of stuff. I will not do that again. Simply because I've seen what it does to me and I've seen what it does to everybody else.
Exactly.
It's no longer acceptable.
Mm. Yep.
Mm. You know, take that one principle, I've seen what it does and it's not acceptable, and you apply it to everything, and that's how I want to live my life, by not tolerating the things that are simply intolerable.
Yeah.
Exactly. No, I understand what you're saying there. And of course, when you look at the water rights once again, trust me, I know what I'm doing. No one owns the water. So, until such time as I tell you that I do own the water, you know, and by that time it's going to be too late for everyone. With Bechtel, etc.
Now there was another backlash to this that I thought was very interesting. Racism in New Zealand is rife, particularly against Maori, and this issue about the water rights, and then they came out with air rights and stuff like that.
Yes.
It's actually, In a way, backfiring, because it's triggering that redneck aspect of this country. Yes. You go, oh, the Maoris are doing this, that, and the other. And I'm like, God dang it. You can't even fight and tell the truth without the infighting, without the enemy dividing and conquering us. You can't even have meetings with the Prime Minister without him wanting to split us all up into separate iwi and stuff like that, so we can tell us each different lies, so that we spend the next 2 years wondering which one of us he told us the truth, instead of saying, hey, he lied to all of us in some way, shape or form.
Yep.
Let's not believe this guy anymore.
Well, it's like the whole ear about the ear. I mean, you know, did anybody ever really figure out, if they're flying from here to America, how much, why the tickets are costed as what they are? It's because they're flying in and out and having to pay air rights anyway.
Mm.
So already, it's already happening.
See, and they don't mention that on the news.
Of course not.
You know, the general population don't actually realise that. They're already doing it. They're already paying for that airspace already. Same with, you know, it's like the Bling and Talek power bill. You know, I mean, we're already. But also then they had the cheek to turn around and ask if anybody wanted to buy shares, for goodness sake. You know?
Didn't we already own them?
I thought it was supposed to be owning. So how
aren't
much
you giving
is
them
that?
Away on our behalf?
Well, hold on a second. You're selling me back something I own. Like, it'd be equivalent of you grabbing my jacket over there and then saying, hey, bro, do you want to buy this jacket? Like, right in front of me, and just be like, dude, that's my jacket.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, well, you can buy shares in it if you want. You know, I'm willing to share your jacket with you. I can take it on the weekends.
As long as you pay the price for it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, well, you're not going to have it.
Well, see, the insanity of it, that's why I call my show The Lighter Side of Genocide, because basically if you're not laughing about this stuff, you'll be incredibly enraged about it.
Yeah.
And basically rage, hatred, it ain't good for you.
No.
It's not good for your health, man. And that's why I kind of, let's get rid of these people sooner rather than later in a non-violent fashion, because I don't want to live my life stressed out about what they're going to do to me next. I don't want to worry about police busting down my door or surveilling me for no good reason and things like that. I just want to live my life in peace and happiness.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in order to do that in this society, you have to become a criminal first.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're criminalised. You're not necessarily a criminal.
Well,
the system will criminalise you.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Say, okay, this is what's happened. Therefore, you're going to have to go to court, and you've got to answer to these charges and all the rest of it.
But and then you become a somebody, don't you? If you become a criminal.
Maybe. Well, I mean, people don't want to be criminals that I'm aware of.
But in terms of the fact that we're nothing anyway, like we're a chattel. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, so if you're a chattel, therefore, when you actually buck the system, they've got to put you in place.
Then they change you into being a criminal.
Yes, yep, yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah.
You know, this is the crux of the issue, really, is that to do what is good and what is just in a society run by insane psychopaths and has been set up by it, you have to be a criminal. Because that is what they have determined is a criminal. Anybody who is against crime is a criminal.
Yes.
In the eyes of the system. Mm.
That's just sad, isn't it? That's just
madness.
And then you get, you know, those little clips, for example, you mentioned the two Hoyt raids. You know, about the, was it, was she 12 or 14 at the time, the girl?
Emily, yeah, she
And she had the...
Bushmaster pointed at her head.
Yeah, exactly.
And even for an adult, that's so traumatising to a child. That child's probably not going to get a good night's sleep the rest of her life, you know, or for a number of years to come.
Exactly. And then kneeled beside the roadside with the rifle to your head, boom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and of course, that also reminded me of a clip. You know, there's a little thing on the U.S. military in Iraq, and they've got that they're going house to house, and they pull one family out. I think the wife opens the door first, and she closes it, and the husband, and then of course, there's a little girl. She comes out, and her mouth is quivering, her hands are up, and her brother's up, and they don't know what's going on. All they know is that, hey, I could potentially be killed here, and that's, you know. I don't know how people can justify that sort of trauma, especially against youngsters like that. There's just no justifying it.
That's and it's like, you know, hey, we're going digital on so that, you know, everybody have to have a TV with that free view.
Is that so that they can spy on you?
No, it's actually so they can sell the remaining UHF frequencies to other private ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna work out like this. It's Freeview, but you have to buy this.
Yes.
Oh,
this ain't free! But also, too, I love what you're saying, because I understood it, is that they needed to have more airways.
They haven't got enough already.
No. Yeah. The thing is, they don't need more airways because, as you see, they've shut down TVNZ7.
Mm.
Why? Yep. TVNZ7 was intellectual. Documentaries, the court report, discussing legal issues in New Zealand, Media 7, which was actually breaking down things and misinterpretations and what have you in the media in New Zealand every week with Russell Brown, who has a guest show on... they were really, really kind of pushing it out there. And of course, this is a discussion that was had on The Nation. You know, TV3's The Nation on Sundays.
Yes.
And the discussion was between three mainstream media people saying, oh, we don't need TV7 because we provide this public service broadcast right here on TV3's The Nation, and TVNZ does Q&A, and Prime has now got backbenchers. Okay, so that's enough. Okay, that's enough democracy. That's enough public service broadcasting. Yep. You know, you don't need dedicated public broadcasting. You need sort of flippant every now and again corporate interpreted public broadcasting for a little point. And that is what they're satisfied with. That is what they think is good enough. And I say, well, I don't think you guys get it in any way, shape, or form. If you are the only source of information, then there's no diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Then if you're lying to us, we will have no idea because there is no alternative.
Lie. We would never lie. Surely you believe us.
Yeah. I mean, we went to a skeptics meeting this one time and we're talking about Monsanto and the genetically modified foods and what have you.
Oh, it's got to be good for you.
And that was the skeptic's interpretation of the genetically modified foods. It's all good. There might be a little possibility that they'll take over the entire world's food supply and exterminate us. But and I'm like, bring up an article about Monsanto has actually kind of outlawed using GMO foods in their company cafeterias. Mm-hmm. Okay, and I mentioned this to the skeptics, and one of them gets out their little smartphone. Of course, you know, EMF radiation skeptics, you know, there's no problem with that whatsoever. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get cancer from it, and it didn't give anybody cancer in World War II either with radiation, did it? They Google up and they search for that headline, and it comes up with these 10 different places that have published it, none of which are mainstream media sources, like some of beforeitsnews.com and blah, 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 blah. She goes, this is a skeptic society meeting and blah, 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 this is not a credible source. And I go, oh, yeah, shoot, I'm sorry. You're not supposed to be skeptical of the mainstream media, only the alternative media, right? Yeah. The thing is, they don't equally apply their skepticism. And I'm of the opinion that basically we are almost schooled, indoctrinated, and virtually forced into being knowledgeless, sycophantic hypocrites. Mm-hmm. Okay, just in general. And it's not our fault. We didn't create the system. The system was created for us, and we didn't do this to ourselves. It's been done to us.
Yep. Mm. And through our ignorance, we let it continue to happen. Mm. So with the awakening, boom.
You've been quite a quiet Richie.
I'm just enjoying the dialogue. But it does come to mind, I was thinking about that they say that we cannot change the land, but we can change our mind about it. Which is not as simple as it sounds, but I think that's what the problem is with that. Unless we get peace individually within us and be calm about it, we don't want to be like these other countries who are going crazy already, that I hear every day. New Zealand is probably the most calmest country in the world at the moment, because we're 4,000 miles from the rest of the nearest, like Australia. And with 4 million people here, it's got a sort of a natural calming thing about it. Yeah.
Hmm. Well, kind of like if you're isolated, you feel like you're far removed from it, kind of thing. But I think we're in the thick of it, and
we're right in the centre of that limited storm.
If you get too complacent,
exactly,
you got problems.
Yeah, we think we're in the comfort zone,
and
everything's swirling around us.
That doesn't affect me. I won't bother doing anything about that until it hits home. Mm. They should have done something about it a long time ago.
Indeed. Right, well, I think we can probably wrap this up now. We'll go round the circle and have final statements from everybody.
Right. Mitakamata, Vinny, for having that time, just the time to start to talk about what's happening for us, or as for myself, as well as where we're at is in this country. But I think for me, I'd just like to, I hope that it becomes one of many interviews. And just good to have the opportunity to catch up and have a little just touch base at the moment, so thanks anyway.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks very much, Vinny. Good to meet you. You welcomed us really with open arms and a big hug. Appreciate that. And of course, I think with the next potential interview, and I don't think it's going to be too far away, we touched on a lot of different topics here and so on, and it was we covered a range and didn't get really in depth, but I think the next one, it could be quite significantly different. Especially if certain things which are meant to transpire, if we can get into some nuts and bolts and really push that out there, I think there could be some really interesting things to actually talk about then. So thank you very much.
I thank you too, Vinny, and as the other two said before, that this is just a training run today. We have you, and we've been talking about you for ages. Don't know how you sleep at night. Vinny's the man in Aotearoa. I was at that meeting the other day when I saw the about the Y, and they had the Te Karere there. Well, you can see they're all controlled and limited on their exposure on different things. And I was telling Toru that now we've got to work on Vinny, because he's private enterprise, he's young, and he's got the nuts and bolts, and we just got to add a bit of grease to it. I just want to say that when we mentioned before that we have the old and the young, and I have to agree that, you know, I was young and then suddenly I found that I'm old and I couldn't believe it. I say to people, I haven't even lived my life yet, I don't know what I want to do, you know, and the next minute you're just looking at this, I'm in a little place. I think John Key himself said he was in a council flat, and I have to say that that's where I am. And I look at these four walls every day and think that what can I do and how can I help out? And because the world has moved that fast in the electronic system, and it's people like you who are in the flow to get things moving, it's how we've got to get it out there, because we can't be sending smoke signals up on the hill and all that, because not allowed to go and grab the wood over there now and burn it because someone owns that or put their name on it.
It's Topu Bro. Like
and so we've got the people with this sort of system, and as you said, it takes 20 minutes, 4 hours to get something, and not people in Aotearoa hearing it, someone in England's hearing it, and it goes over the world in quick time, in real time. And that is so beautiful. And if we can solve the thing with a stroke of a pen or a word, instead of bringing out all the guns, as David Icke said, solving peace with war, I mean, it is just
oxymoron.
Bullshit, excuse my friend.
Yeah.
On the away, it is paid for by John Key, probably. But anyway, a stroke of a pen here, or a word, and it's going to be the power of the words to the right consciousness of the humans in this part to spread it over the globe. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just remind me if I can interject.
Well, yeah, for
sure. You know, a couple of things that you mentioned. It was Gandhi, wasn't it?
Right.
You know, when he was asked, what is the pathway to peace?
Right.
And he said, there is no pathway to peace. Peace is the path.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And if you look at it from that perspective, why would you want to go to war? Yeah. And you talked about John Key in a council flat. Well, isn't Queen Elizabeth in a council flat called Buckingham Palace or something like that?
You know, they say, and same with Mandela, you know, in one of his quotes, he talks about, you know, time to stand up. Yeah. We're standing up, time to step up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. And also, my final statement is that you have a lot of interpretations about a lot of things, and we're all from different races, different backgrounds. We've all got different ideas, but the one thing that really draws us all together is that, hey, we speak English, and we don't want to be exterminated by some ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag. Hey, and it's on the points we agree, we should come together and collaborate. Because the points that we disagree, you know, they're just going to hold us up. We won't get bugger all accomplished in the meantime. So let's just save that for another time, perhaps after we've overthrown these scum who are trying to kill us. You know, maybe when we're not under the threat of a global genocide and total enslavement, that kind of thing. Once that's gone and out of the way, then I'll start bickering you about whether or not there were space beams on 9/11 or whatever. You know, we'll have some time to focus on that. But now, the time is basically best spent doing what we can accomplish and leaving the too hard basket in the too hard basket. Because as far as I know, it hasn't actually been that difficult for people to wake up. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been that difficult for people to notice they're being lied to. And it hasn't been that difficult for people to go out and protest and make a difference in the past or the present or in future. So let's just realize the fact that we are incredibly powerful as individuals. Mm-hmm. And when individuals who are powerful by themselves work in concert with others, not controlling them, mm-hmm. not dominating them, but working with them.
Yes.
That's where my employophobia comes from, because I never want to work for anybody ever again. Mm-hmm. And I only want to work with people from now on. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, kia ora.